And now the game where we do what we can to remind knowledgeable people that no, in fact, they don't know everything. The name of our guest used to strike terror into the hearts of certain people, namely actors, writers, directors, and financial backers of Broadway shows in the 1980s and early 90s. As the chief theater critic for the New York Times, he was known as the Butcher of Broadway. These days, though, as the weekly op-ed columnist for the New York Times, he tries to strike terror into politicians and pundits and other assorted targets. Frank Rich, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So if you don't mind, let's start right in the Butcher of Broadway thing. Because I was in the theater in the 1980s, and you were much feared. People thought that you were just viciously destroying things left and right. Did you enjoy doing that?
It's overstated, and no. Although, you know, if I had been able to put a dent in Cats, maybe I would have been happy.
You tried, though, didn't you?
I tried, but I did not succeed.
No. Your negative reviews, such as they were legendary. For example, I think your review of the play Moose Murders became more well-known than the play itself.
Well, the play itself is virtually unknown because it literally closed on opening night. And it was a play that even 20 years later is unforgettable. It was a murder mystery where it turned out the murderer was a quadriplegic. It became a legendary failure, and what happened was that everyone in New York claimed to have seen it on that one performance.
Right.
Even though it was in a 1,000-seat theater.
It would have had to be in Yankee Stadium.
Exactly.
Your bad reviews, when they came, were great bad reviews. I mean, did you enjoy on those occasions when you wrote a negative review? Was it more fun than writing a positive review?
No, there was nothing more exhilarating than to really to write a favorable review of something that you really felt passionately about, you know, a Sunday in the Park with George or an Angels in America. Bad reviews, particularly of really good artists, are, you know, sorrowful and difficult to write.
Yeah.
However, there's a small category of play where you can just write jokes because it's not even in contention. And weirdly, when I was doing in this job, they all seemed to begin with M. There was Moose Murders, there was a Marlowe, a musical about Christopher Marlowe, the playwright.
Oh, God.
He and Shakespeare smoked dope backstage. There was a musical called Merlin about it was ridiculous.
Oh.
There were at least two musicals called Marilyn about Marilyn Monroe, one of which had Arthur Miller as a song and dance man.
Sure. Were you ever one of those guys who you hear about who reviewed it because you tried to do it and couldn't? Were you ever a playwright or an actor yourself?
Except in the earliest days, like in junior high school, no. I really fell in love. I was in love with the theater, but I really fell in love with the journalism early on.
Right.
And so, no. Such critics do exist, and more embarrassingly, some of them actually, once they became critics, taken furloughs to try to direct or act or write plays, and it's almost always excruciating.
It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. When you showed up, because you were pretty feared, the New York Times in general and you in particular were seen as having a lot of power, fairly
sure.
or not. When you showed up, did people's behavior change? Were people scared of you? Did they suck up to you? What was it like?
Well, what was crazy was everyone was trained, no matter what the show, to scream and yell and cheer. And it could be the worst thing in the history of the world, and people would be falling out of their seats.
So did they ever plan people next to you to weep and turn to you and say, "This has changed my life"?
Oh, all the time, and it's so transparent. And people would be having these ostentatiously loud conversations like, "Oh my God, you know, not since Long Day's Journey into Night have I liked to play, you know, as much as Get Gertie's Garter or whatever it was."
Let me ask you, though, about your current gig. You've been writing an op-ed column for the Sunday Times now for many years.
Yeah.
Could you sum it up, what your take is? I mean, do you have a particular angle that you could say what it is? You write about politics mainly, pop culture as it affects politics.
I've always, you know, I grew up in Washington, D.C. as a kid, in love with the theater, and I think my entire career, including really as a theater critic to some extent, it's been to try to find the intersection of culture and the news, or culture and politics. And so while it's not something I follow rigidly, it is my sensibility and my inclination, and I like to refract the real world through the fake world and vice versa, and it's fun for me.
Right. I've noticed, and forgive me for saying this, that certainly over the last decade or 8 years or so, you've been rather harsh in your criticisms of people, certain people on certain sides of the political spectrum.
Right.
You've been fairly negative.
Yes.
Are you enjoying yourself?
You know, well, I have to say that's different from the theater. You know, I frankly have, you know, if it's upsetting to write a negative review of, say, a great artist that has a failure, I can't say that I was crying in my sleep about criticizing Dick Cheney.
Right.
And let's face it, more is at stake in a war in Iraq than in moose murders, I think.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
I don't know if moose murders actually killed anybody.
No, just the audience.
Exactly. Now, we're going to try something with you. We haven't tried this before, but like I said, we've noted again that you're known for your harsh opinions, particularly the last few years. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring out the kinder, gentler Frank Rich. We're going to ask you right now, just a little exercise before we get to the game. We're going to ask you to name some people in the news, and we want you to say something nice about them.
Go ahead.
Here we go. Ready? Mark Sanford, governor of South Carolina.
Brilliant stand-up comic.
There you go. Good. Alaska Governor Sarah Palin.
I can't use the same joke twice. A great argument for the virtues of Hawaii.
All right. Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly?
Yes.
He makes Glenn Beck makes him look sane.
There you are. Voldemort.
Not the Phantom of the Opera.
There you go. Well done, Frank Rich. Congratulations. You see the softer side of Frank Rich. Frank Rich, in fact, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Now this is a butcher.
They used to call you the Butcher of Broadway. Unfair, we know, so we thought we'd ask you about a genuine butcher. In fact, the man called the most famous butcher in the world, Dario Cecchini of Tuscany, Italy, answered two questions about Signor Cecchini correctly. You win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Frank Rich playing for?
Peter, Frank is playing for Peggy Echt and Matt Price of Atlanta, Georgia.
All right. Here's your first question. Though he came from a long line of butchers going back centuries, Dario Cecchini vowed to become the first Cecchini in three centuries to do something else with his life. Instead, so, he trained to be A, pastry chef, B, a veterinarian, or C, an animal rights activist.
Boy, that's interesting. Animal rights activist.
No, actually, it was veterinarian. Wanted to be a veterinarian. He studied it until his father, on his deathbed, apologized for not teaching him the fine art of butchery. Dario immediately left veterinary school and found a different way to cure animals.
What a great story. I love it.
It's true.
I love it.
Don't blame me. He did it. All right. Now, the most famous Tuscan beef dish is bistecca fiorentina, a thick steak famed in that region. But according to author Bill Buford, who spent 6 months training with Cecchini, on one occasion, the master butcher refused to serve bistecca fiorentinas. Why? A, he felt the customers that day did not deserve them. B, he had decided that the steak was, quote, fascistic in its brutality. Or C, the customers asked for a bottle of A1 steak sauce with it.
I vote for the third.
You're going to go for the A1 steak sauce?
Yes.
He was offended?
Yes.
No, it was A. He just felt they didn't deserve them. Buford writes, quote...
Are you sure he's not French?
No. He's moody. He's Italian. Quote, says Buford, on my first morning, three requests were refused for no reason I could understand, except in Dario's eyes, the customers had not been deserving. All right. Last question here. At the restaurant next to his butcher shop in Tuscany, the restaurant is called Only Meat. Cecchini doesn't serve steaks, but he does serve what? A, boiled beef knees with salsa verde, B, pig esophagus with kale and garlic, or C, braised sheep lips with singed elk hair.
I would go for B.
B, you're going to go for pig esophagus with kale and garlic?
Yes.
Sounds good. Sounds like
especially
trafe.
Especially with Mitch Law.
Yes, I know. I was about to say it sounds trafe, but it sounds good. No, it was A, boiled beef knees. Boiled beef knees, specialty of the house there. Yeah. Carl, how did Frank Rich do in our quiz?
Not too well, Peter. No correct answers, and he had to have at least two correct answers to win for Peggy and Matt.
I think we should do this as in a Frank Rich style. Like, Frank Rich is a complete failure at taking quizzes. Clearly, he has no, I'm sorry. That's cool. You see, you seem to handle it well, though.
I tried.
You've been in the trenches, and you can take it. Frank Rich is an award-winning op-ed columnist for the New York Times. Frank Rich, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Author, meat and more potatoes just ain't right like green tomatoes. Here I'm waiting, palpitating, with all that meat and no potatoes.